Good morning, everyone, and Happy New Year. Welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater, and your moderator for this morning. Today is Sunday, January 1st, 2023. The share ID numbers for Friday, December 30th, 2022 are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 19,803, that's 19,803. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 19,804, that's 19,804. This morning, A Vision for You presents, Let's Start 2023 by Starting. We come to Overeaters Anonymous as the result of the constant frustration, relentless pain, complete despair, and utter defeat we experience in our disease of compulsive overeating. We cannot solve this problem by ourselves. Our eating careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could eat like other people. We begin to realize that anything that comes from our own resources, our will, our effort, our philosophies, our goals, our resolutions, including New Year's resolutions, or our good intentions, won't solve our problem of compulsive overeating. Our human resources alone simply aren't sufficient. Our situation truly seems hopeless. Of all the 12 steps, which one do you think is the most important? Well, it has to be starting at step one. Why do anything about a problem when you believe no problem exists? Step one states, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. A good first step makes or breaks the recovery process. The first step is so basic to starting recovery that the AA 12 and 12 says it is the only step that we can practice with absolute perfection. Step one is an admission of the central problem we face as compulsive overeaters, our powerlessness over food, and the unmanageable life that has resulted. Once we can admit our powerlessness, a door opens to the solution to our problem. The secret of the 12 steps is that in spite of all the odds, it is possible to be able to effectuate such dramatic change, a transformation in personality, a transformation in character, a transformation in values. We are restored to sanity. A new world comes into view. Before recovery, we had been subjected to a vicious cycle of personal self-destruction under the guise of seeking ease and comfort. With recovery, we have been granted a spiritual journey of transformation, truly a new state of consciousness and being. Joining us today to speak on this very topic is Harlan G., a recovered compulsive overeater from Scottsdale, Arizona, and a beloved member of Overeaters Anonymous and A Vision for You. Harlan is dedicated to the 12-step way of life and always enthusiastically carrying the good news of the program of recovery. And it's with great pleasure and appreciation that I welcome my friend Harlan G. to the line. Good morning, Harlan.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you and Happy New Year, not just to you, but to everyone that's either listening now or listening on the recording. A good year, a healthy year. I'm glad to be here, and as was stated, I am Harlan G., and I do indeed live in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I'm so honored to be doing this right on New Year's Day. You know, I woke up this morning, and I was lucky enough to wake up, And I came downstairs and I opened up my computer, and one of my favorite things to see every morning is my little comic. And there's a particular comic that I just adore, and I don't like to start my day without it. And the sister is coming in to wake up the brother, and it says here, Happy New Year, it's 2023. She says, wake up, Jeffy, it's a brand new year. The old year left and the new year came in. And he's visioning a little baby coming in, and an old man with a long gray beard is leaving. And he goes to the window, and he sees the backyard, and he sees the sled, and he sees a football and a bunch of snow and a tree. And you know what he says? He says, I don't see anything different. What really changed from yesterday? Nothing. Unless we change. If I want different, I have to do different. And since we're going to be discussing step one, now I'm going to pre-warn you, I'm going to cut short the presentation here on the doctor's opinion in step one, because I want to open up the questions and answers so that we have longer time for questions and answers than we normally do. I want that a little more protracted today. If you remember last year and the year before, that's what we did. And I like doing that, so we're going to keep with that today. But for the sake of Dr. Silkworth, for the sake of step one, I'm going to just let you know that nothing ever changed except my disease got worse and worse and worse and worse. Because I learned later on in my recovery, this disease is permanent, it is progressive, and if untreated, it is fatal. So what actually happened between yesterday and today is my disease got worse. So I have to take more and different action. Just because it says something different on my calendar, that doesn't mean that I'm going to get the results that I wish for. It means that my disease got worse, so I'm going to have to do more, dig deeper, and do different than I did yesterday. When I was young, there was a song called I Love You More Today Than Yesterday, But Not As Much As Tomorrow. I need OA and God more today than I did yesterday, but not as much as I'm going to need them tomorrow. Dr. Silkworth, he was an interesting character, and he gives us the basis of step one. Now, for centuries, going all the way back thousands of years ago to Solomon, the king of Israel. And Solomon, in the book of Solomon, he writes that he believes that alcohol is an illness, but he couldn't prove it, and he had no remedy for it. Notice I didn't say cure. I said remedy. Solomon believed that it was an illness. He who has woe, he who has bruises and feels beaten, but remembers it not. You know how you wake up if you're on food or drugs or liquor and you just feel like you're on top of a mast and you're swaying to and fro and on a ship on the ocean and you don't know why? Now, in England in the 1640s, there was a guy, and his name was Dr. Trotter. Dr. Trotter believed that alcoholism was an illness, but he couldn't prove it and he had no remedy for it, but he believed that it was an illness too. Around 1790, the very first person that was ever appointed to be the nation's Surgeon General, and his name was Benjamin Rush, Dr. Benjamin Rush. And if you ever come to my city, now I live in Scottsdale, Arizona, but I'm born and raised in Chicago. There's a Rush Street in Chicago, and it is named for him. There's also a Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's Hospital. I think the name of it has changed. I think they've been taken over by some other outfit. You know how these hospitals are bought and sold like you couldn't believe. But it used to be Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's, and Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's is not only named for Dr. Rush, but it's also the hospital that Dr. Bob Smith did his residency in. He did his residency in Chicago at Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's. Is it odd or is it God that Dr. Bob did his residency at a hospital named for Dr. Rush, who in 1790 wrote a paper where he believed alcoholism was an illness, but he couldn't prove it, and he sure had no remedy for it. Around the time of the 1920s, there was a neurologist in New York City, and this neurologist's name was Dr. William Duncan Silkworth. Around the time of Black Tuesday, which is October the 29th, 1929, Dr. Silkworth was a little over-invested in the stock market, just a bit, and he lost everything he had because on Black Tuesday, when the market went bluey and the Great Depression started, he found himself unable to function economically. And his friend Charles Townes owned and operated in New York City at 293 Central Park West. It's now an apartment building. In 1901, Charles Townes started a hospital for the treatment of drug addiction. Yes, they had drug addiction then. And alcoholism in New York. And wealthy people would come there to dry out. It was the creme de la creme operation for the treatment of alcoholism. And he developed the so-called belladonna treatment. Belladonna is actually a poison. But what he found that if he could cut this poison with certain chemicals, it would give these alcoholics with delirium tremens, it would quiet them down so that they could dry out and not die. And he developed this, and he was an innovator in the field of alcoholism. But he wasn't someone who had a remedy for it. That came along on June the 10th, 1935. That came along through a series of things that go back to 1934, November of 34, when a man named Ebbie Thatcher told Bill Wilson about a spiritual solution, and things that we can go into at another time happened, which set us in motion so that we could be here this morning. Is it odd or is it God? But in the doctor's opinion, we are talking, now if you want a absolute word-for-word review of the doctor's opinion, you go on the website, avisionforyou.info, and you type in Harlan G., doctor's opinion, or others have done marvelous ones too. Those are the ones that I went word-for-word by, but this morning we're just going to sort of go through it, because as I said, I want to open it up for questions and answers. But one of the things that Dr. Silkworth observed, one of the things that he stumbled onto through observation was something that had never been considered in the annals of history. See, everybody for centuries believed that alcoholism was a matter of willpower. It was a matter of stupidity, lack of discipline, lack of willpower. If you only loved your mother, you wouldn't eat like that, young man. That's what people told me all my life. If you loved your dad and you respected your dad, you wouldn't let yourself get so fat. And you should pull yourself up by the bootstraps. I don't know, I was wearing penny loafers or I was wearing gym shoes. I didn't see any bootstraps to pull myself up by. I just didn't know what the heck they were talking about, but I knew I couldn't do it. And I wanted to so desperately. Oh, I wanted to do it. See, what these people didn't realize when they were telling me, don't eat so much, you'll feel better, is that I wanted to acquiesce to their demands. But I found that when I don't eat so much, they were right. I feel anger better. I feel fear better. I feel, crushes on girls better. I feel like killing myself better. I feel like killing you better. I feel fear better. I feel like I don't fit into the world better. So they were right. When I don't eat so much, wow, I feel better. And those feelings would burst to the surface in me like Roman candles on the 4th of July. 4th of July. Sorry, let me get a glass of water here. And the only thing I knew to do at that point was to eat more food. Because the only solution to the problem of the buildup of these emotions that I knew was Reese's peanut butter cups or pizza or God knows what, French fries or God knows what. That was the solution to my problem. And food was never my problem. It was the solution to my problem. The problem wasn't food. If food was my problem, I may have been someone that ate compulsively. Now, you hear I'm eating compulsively, compulsive overeater. It sounds the same. It sounds very similar. They are universes apart. I have a friend of mine. He lives in Chicago. He's a CPA. And he could go to a buffet with me today. Today is Sunday. He could go with me to a buffet and out-eat me. He could go to that buffet and man, oh man, a Shevitz, he could clean that thing out. Now, it's Sunday. He wouldn't think of eating till Wednesday. The difference is I'd be eating on the way home from the buffet, and I'd be eating all day today. That's the difference. So let's take a closer look at that. Some people eat compulsively from time to time, and they'll gain a little weight, and they can self-regulate their weight by just controlling their appetite. They have the ability to do that. But if I am a person who eats compulsively, then food is indeed my problem. And by disciplining myself or curtailing the amount of food I take in, I can control the situation. I am not of that character. I am not of that ilk. I am not of that breed or variety. I am a compulsive overeater. Compulsive, I do it against my will. I am compulsive about food. I have a disease of the mind, and I started to say that for centuries, this was believed to be exclusively a problem of willpower, discipline, character, that the people who suffer from bulimia, the people who suffer from anorexia, the people who suffer from compulsive overeating lacked some modicum of discipline. They lacked some modicum of character. It was a matter of stupidity. It was a matter of insanity. But it certainly couldn't be a disease because that was never considered. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. And the mind is triggered by the discomfort that I have felt from day one of my life, from the world that I was born into. I feel scared. I feel intimidated. I feel superior to. I feel inferior to. But never am I comfortable in my skin unless I can at once, get that ease and comfort that comes instantly by eating certain foods. And when I eat those foods, I also trigger what we're going to talk about right now, the physical allergy. Because never before in the annals of history before Silkworth, never before was there a physical component ever discussed. And he tells us that any discussion or any definition of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. There are people who believe to this day that there is no physical component to it. I would say that I'm going to go with Silkworth. Excuse me. I'm going to go with Silkworth on this one. There indeed is. That the more of certain things I eat, the more I want, the more I want, the more I eat, the more I eat, the more I want, and it's just endless. Because were there no physical component to this, I would carry M&Ms around in a little change purse or a little pocket or a Batman utility belt or something. And when I got scared or I got angry or I got jealous or I got happy or I felt accomplishment, I felt fine, or I felt bored, I would pop in an M&M and everything would be just groovy. But you see, this physical factor makes it impossible to do that, because if I eat an M&M, I'm going to eat 1,000 M&Ms, and it says in the doctor's opinion on page XXVI that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. Now, we have been talking for a while here about changes and the new year and all this other stuff, and there's something in the doctor's opinion four times. It must be pretty important if on 8 pages of doctor's opinion, he puts something in there 4 times. Because when the big book wants to teach me something, it does not teach it to me once. It does what teachers call spiral the information. In other words, what is the purest form of instruction? The purest form of instruction is repetition. And so on page XXVI, at the bottom of the page, XXVI, it tells me for the first of 4 times, more often than not, it is imperative. What does imperative mean? Important above all else, that a man's brain be cleared before he is approached, as he then has a better understanding and accepting what we have to offer. In other words, I must put down the food. I must put the food down. Now, I know some of you are going to ask me in the questions and answers, how do I put down the food? I'll answer that right now. You put it down by putting it down. Now, the next person is going to ask me, but you just said we're powerless over food. If I can't eat because of the allergy, and I can't keep from eating because of the twist of the mind, and I'm powerless over food, why are you saying to us we must put down the food when we're powerless? Yes, you are, but you are not helpless. You have disciplined yourself for days at a time to diet. There isn't a person listening to this that came here as a first solution to this problem. I don't know what it is, but the human ego will not allow the right answer to come in until we've tried every wrong answer on the block. And the last house on the block is Overeaters Anonymous. I don't know why that is, but I know after 43, almost 44 years in here, that it is the case. So we can stay out of the food for the 2 days necessary. All it is 2 days. And then, of course, you have to stay out of the food after 2 days. But once you go to the second day and you've completed it, you can now begin the steps. And the steps are not going to be an instant relief from your desire to eat. But at least it begins this process. Now, the way you put down the food is you cease ingesting allergic ingredients and foods. You know what jazzes you up. You can get food plans. They're on OA.org. There is the Dignity of Choice, a new plan of eating. You can see a nutritionist. You can do whatever. There's lots and lots of options out there. If you want recovery, God will provide recovery for you. But you have to do the footwork. Now, on the bottom of page XXVII, very bottom, last sentence, it says, of course an alcoholic ought to be freed from his physical craving for liquor, and this often requires a definite hospital procedure before psychological measures can be of maximum benefit. What does that say? It says, put the food down for the second of 4 times. At the bottom of that page, this is the cornerstone of our recovery here. It says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it's injurious, in other words, we know we're killing ourselves, we do it anyway because we can't resist this effect. What is that effect? It is that sense of ease and comfort that comes instantly by eating certain foods. It just makes everything okay. It makes everything groovy. It makes everything beautiful. This sensation is so elusive that while we admit it's injurious, we cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. Does that mean I think today is May 9th? No. What it means is I'm looking at Chips Ahoy cookies, I'm looking at a Geno's East Pizza in Chicago, and I am thinking to myself that this time it's going to be okay that I eat that pizza, that I eat that cookie, that I eat that candy, and I am deluding myself into thinking that this time it won't hurt me, and it has never not hurt me. It has never snot triggered that allergy. It has never snot sent me spiraling. I can feel my English teachers at Mather High School turning in their graves by me saying never not, but okay, I thought it was good. But anyway, the sensation is so, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. In other words, purging seems normal. Anorexia seems normal. Being morbidly obese seems normal. Eating the way we're eating seems normal to the point where it just seems like this is okay. And it's not. They are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. What does impunity mean? They're not getting punished for it. A little later on today, I have some friends, and they're going to be gathering at a place, and we're going to watch some football games. See, I don't live where the Chicago Bears are on TV. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. So if I want to watch the Bears, I either have to pay for it, or I have to go to a place where they have it. I'm going to go to a place where we're going to get together. And while I'm there, I'm going to see people that can eat a half a hamburger. A half a hamburger! It's a miracle that I haven't killed them by now, because I've certainly wanted to on 1,000 different occasions. How does somebody eat a half a freaking hamburger and they don't even finish the half? How does somebody order that and take 3 of the fries and push the rest of the fries away and say, who wants the rest of these? I'm done. Who does that? They do. They do. They can take a half a hamburger, take the rest home or not, and push it to the center of the table if they're not going to take it home and say, who wants the rest of this? I'm done. I want to pull out a jackhammer and start jackhammering their skulls. Not really. I love them. But you get the picture. You get the scenario here, okay? After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving, why does he call it a phenomenon? He knows it's there. It's as plain as the nose on your face. He can't prove it scientifically, but he calls it a phenomenon because it's idiopathic. He doesn't know where it comes from. He can't exactly put his hand on it, but he knows it's there. They pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. When he talks about the psychic change, he's talking about what we would know as a spiritual awakening. He just didn't use Oxford group language. He is a man of science. He was not a man of the Oxford group. And so this paragraph, if recovery were a building, this paragraph would be the cornerstone of that building. Because without this paragraph, we don't have a clear picture that food was never the problem, that food is the solution to the problem if you are a compulsive overeater. If you eat compulsively, food is your problem. If you are a compulsive overeater, food is the solution to the problem. I hope I've made that clear. Page XXX. Last sentence of the second to the last paragraph on page XXX. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. That's the third time that he has told us to put the food down. Third time. My friend Ruth M. did a very famous podcast. I recommend it. It's called Entire Abstinence. You can see it, or not see it. You can hear it on avisionforyou.info. Go to avisionforyou.info and look up Ruth M., Entire Abstinence. You won't be disappointed. She's wonderful. That's the third time God is telling us, God through Silkworth, but that's the third time that Silkworth is telling us, put the food down. On page XXXI, in the description of Hank Parkhurst, which is the first of the about 1 year prior, that paragraph, one of the sentences here toward the middle is, following the elimination of alcohol, following, not preceding, not in concert with, not concurrent, following the elimination of alcohol, again, he is reiterating that the food must be down as a prerequisite. There was found to be no permanent brain injury. He accepted the plan outlined in this book. 1 year later, he called to see me, and I experienced a very strange sensation. I knew the man by name and partly recognized his features, but there all resemblance ended. Now, he goes on to describe Hank Parkhurst's recovery. Step one, we admitted, you are not alone. It is not I admitted. It is not you admitted. It is not they admitted. It is we admitted. First word of the first step is we. And how do you put the food down is answered in that word. You lean on us. We lean on each other. We have each other to lean on, thank God. I am of the belief that the vision for you is the renaissance of OA. I see and hear more recovery in vision for you than I've seen in almost half a century in these rooms. There are people, if you are struggling and you find yourself at the precipice of 2023, and you find yourself with a program that's not headed in the direction that you would quite want, there are sponsors and fellows here in A Vision for You that are willing and able to help you. Lean on us. There is a phone list. Go to avisionforyou.info. Type in your membership, your name. Type in your passcode. Go on the phone list. It couldn't be easier. There are people that will take phone calls. You want to talk to people in Dublin, Ireland? We've got that. You want to talk to people in Dublin, Georgia? We've got that too. You want Dublin, Ohio? That we still have. So no matter what time zone you're in, if it's early, if it's late, if it's this, if it's that, there are people here that are willing and able to help you. We span the globe. The sun never sets on A Vision for You. The sun never sets. We have people from different continents. We have people from different countries, different states, different regions. The sun does not set here on A Vision for You. We're so lucky. Take advantage of it. Don't sit there and suffer. Don't try to do this on your own. And for the love of God, please don't wait till you lose X amount of pounds to come back. We can't see you over the freaking phone. Come on back. We are better with you than we are without you. We admitted we were powerless over food. Powerless. We lacked dominion. Our lives had become unmanageable. I can't manage a life when all I can think about is food and eating and food and eating. And when I'm in the food, everything and everyone that's talking to me sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher. All I'm thinking about is food. I'm not thinking about what you're saying to me. I couldn't care less. Drop dead, don't drop dead. Give me the candy. I don't care. Give me the candy. If you're not part of the freaking solution, you're part of the problem, get the heck out of my way. So if I want different in 2023, I have to do different. This is not a program for people who need it. It's not a program for people who want it. It's a program for people who do it. And what I have to divorce myself from, if I'm going to move forward in this program, is I have to divorce myself from this need that I developed as a child in school to understand before I move forward. No, it's not about what I understand. This is why I am so opposed to these lengthy and copious assignments. And they're fine for a lot of people. They're great. I knew Fred Schneider. Fred was the guy who started the HOW program. I knew him. He knew me. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But a lot of these assignments and these ancillary things, and get the person, get through the steps quickly. You've got the rest of your life to go back through there. get through as quickly as you can, because it's not about what you understand or what you know. It's about what you do. It's about the action that you take. And on page 89 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the most whopping promise I've ever known. It says in the very first sentence of working with others, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity indeed, from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Don't you want to get to that point? Don't fear sponsoring. You don't have to be the perfect sponsor. You just have to show the people how you work the steps. You better be afraid not to sponsor. I hear this all the time. I'm afraid to sponsor. Let me just let you in on something, and I've sponsored more than my fair share of people through the decades. If they want to recover, you can't say the wrong thing. If they don't want to recover, you can't say the right thing. And there's many, many people who I've sponsored that are knee-deep in pizza boxes and ice cream boxes and Cheetos bags. But I'm not. I'm abstinent. On the 29th of December, I celebrated 24 years of back-to-back beautiful, blissful abstinence. How grateful am I? How grateful. I don't have the vocabulary to tell God, to tell you how much I appreciate every day of life. I wanted to die so desperately in this disease. I didn't want to live. I was 6 and 7 years old, and I got a very clear signal. I can't live with the food. I can't live without the food. Just let me die. I want to live, and I want to serve, and I want to do the things God wants me to do. I'm so lucky to be part of this fellowship. Oh, the places I've gone and the people that I've met. I am beyond lucky. I am a grateful compulsive overeater. No, I wouldn't want to go through the pain, the loneliness that I've walked through to get here again. No, I don't want to do that. I really don't. God save me from that pain, that loneliness, and that alienation, and the physical hell of being over 700 pounds. I was 335 pounds as a senior in high school at Mather in Chicago. I was 500 pounds as a sophomore in college and 600 pounds by the time I graduated college. I was over 700 pounds. Now I'm 228.7. I've lost over 500 pounds. It's been a miracle. It's been a journey. It's been a journey, a long journey. A tear-stained journey, a lonely journey. But when I needed you most, you came and you held my hand and you gave me a book and you gave me the one thing that no one else could give me. You gave me yourself, your story, your love, your hug, your attention. You pulled me through hell. In recovery, I've been divorced. In recovery, I have a child doesn't want to speak to me. In recovery, I've been broken up with. In recovery, I've had many, many a heartbreak. And I assume I'm going to have many more. But when I needed you most, you were there. You came when no one else could, because you speak and understand the language of the heart. How grateful am I? As grateful as a person's soul can be. Okay. What I'd like to do now, even though it may be early, I don't care. What I'd like Leah to do is help me with this, because I can't do this on my own. I don't know how much time. I assume it's a while. Let's open it up for questions and answers, and let's follow a couple of things. If you would, please indulge me. For the love of God, no math questions. And for the love of God, no food questions. Let's not waste Q&A time on food questions that are better answered by your sponsor, by your nutritionist, or by a pamphlet called A New Plan of Eating. No, so if we can agree on no food, and for the love of God, no math questions, let's open it up, Leah, for questions and answers, and let's begin the year. If you have a question, please ask it, and if you please don't make it a long thing, because in the interest of time, let's get as many people in here as we can. Leah, can you help me out here, and let's open it up for Q&A.
I sure can. I sure can. Thank you so much, Harlan, for your captivating and powerful presentation this morning. Truly a message of depth and weight, as always. We appreciate you tremendously. The share ID for today's presentation, 19,807. That's 19807. Harlan's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so please don't request it during the Q&A. And, yes, we will now transition to question and answer. You're going to press star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Joanne L.
Fran Marie.
Harlan, it sounds like bop, 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 bop,
yeah,
bop,
I
can't. Right?
I don't think I could pick one name out of that. That's what I'm thinking. How
we're sitting with Charlie Brown again.
I can't imagine.
Okay, so Joanne, I believe I heard Joanne L.
Yes.
Fran, Anne Marie M, Roz G. Who did I miss?
Susan L.
Susan?
L.
Yes. Who was the gentleman?
Pete.
Pete. Hey, Pete. Thanks. Okay, well, let's start with that group. I have Joanne L., Fran, Anne Marie M., Roz G., Susan L., and Pete B. Let's get started. Go ahead, Joanne.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Harlan. This is Joanne L. from Rhode Island, and I remember you from way back in an airport when you and I, when we bonded on a cot.
That's right. I remember you.
Harlan,
I remember you. Yeah.
This is the question I have always wanted answered. What is a recovered person?
Oh, that's one of the most frequently asked question on A Vision for You is, can I be heard? May I be heard? Can I be heard? May I be heard? That's number one. And number two is, what is the difference between recovered and recovering? So I'm glad you asked it. Let's get it out of the way. A recovered person is a person who has had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. And a recovering person is a person who is working toward that spiritual awakening. And when you go to the bottom of page 84, the very bottom, the first thing you see is step 10, and then when you get to the bottom, it says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time, sanity will have returned. One of these days, we'll do something on special edition on step two, the history of step two, the different things about step two. But let's take a look at the marriage between step 10 and step two. Step two introduces us to the word sanity. Why does it say, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity instead of sobriety or abstinence? Because sanity is so much more open-ended. And what the program does is, after a while, you start to notice that things other than eating and not eating, become healed. Things you didn't even know were vandalized by the disease and destroyed by the disease start to heal. So sanity is much more open-ended. But let's continue. Sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. Does your life mirror this paragraph? Are you still fighting food? Are you still
Absolutely.
Getting up? And well, then that means some. Where are you in the step process, Joanne?
Well, I hope to think that I work the steps on a daily basis.
Well, you're working the steps on a daily basis, but if you're still tempted by that food regularly, something is just not correct. We got to pop open that hood, and maybe you need to.
Harlan.
Harlan. We lost you.
I don't know what happened there. But if you are not in that place of neutrality, the overwhelming majority of the time, then something is amiss. Something in steps 1, 2, 3, I don't know what it is, 4. The two culprits usually are 2 and 10, usually 2 and 10. And that's where a lot of people will go off the tracks. I would take a look at your program. I might consider, you know, going back and going through things, because you should be, if as you say, you're working the steps, you should be in that place of neutrality. And everything between what we've read and the bottom of 85 up to where it says step 11, your life should mirror that as closely as possible. If it's not, different actions are required, Joanne. I would go back, pop the hood open, and see what's going on under the hood. Okay?
Thank you, Fran, for your, thank you, Joanne, for your question. Appreciate it. We now have Fran with a question.
Hello, this is Fran.
Yes. Thank you.
Hi, this is Fran S. from New Jersey and Martha's Vineyard. First of all, thank you, Harlan. I think it's just amazing that you have your recovery. And one of the most moving things I ever heard was your qualification in some special edition. I forgot the year or the date, but it just caused me to stand still. So thank you for all that. I'm going to ask a question that I think is appropriate for New Year's. I have a resentment that I've had from before the time I came into OA, which was probably before anybody was born here in 1978. And OA did save my life, I have to say.
I was born in 1984, so I was around for it. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You're younger than me. All right, I'll try to condense this into a question. I am now working in the Vision program with a sponsor. And last night, New Year's Eve, one of the triggers for my resentment came up, same resentment I've had for 45 years, and I went into like an epileptic fit over it. I didn't eat. I didn't not eat, which is one of my problems. I just went into that crazed, it was as if I was having an emotional, spiritual binge, and it happens every time. And I've done resentments on these two people.
Done resentments or you've done inventory?
I'm sorry. I've done 4th steps on these people over and over, and the 9th step, and it doesn't go away. And I just want to know if you have any experience with resentments that you
I've never had one. No, I don't know what to tell you. You're talking about. I'm sorry. I was in dreamland for a minute there. Okay. Well, one of the first things I have to really look at here is the payoff to a resentment is I love them because I don't have to look at myself. I love a good resentment. And what I found out about myself is that I cannot resent. Every time I have a resentment, it's a lie. Now, you may think, why is he saying that to me? No way it's a lie. These people were horrible to me. Well, they may have been. I'm not doubting it. I wasn't there in 1978. I was vending at Wrigley Field. In 1978, I was doing a lot of different things, and I didn't get over to New Jersey and see what these people did to you, Fran. But here's what I do know. A resentment has a payoff to it, and the payoff is I don't have to look at myself. I can look at you. I can hold up the magnifying glass rather than the mirror, and I can resent you, and I can excuse errant nonsense in my life, eating and resenting. But what I have to remember is the process begins with a willingness to let it go. Why should I let this resentment go? I have a resentment against A, B, and C. Why should I let it go? They're horrible. Well, let's get back to the lie I just described. First of all, every time I replay that resentment in my head, I change their part just a little bit, and I make it a little bit more dastardly and a little bit more nefarious, and they were a little bit more wrong, and they were wrong, and they were wrong, and they came along and did me dirt, because I also make my part a little more angelic and a little more innocent, and I was standing there doing nothing, and they came along and did me dirt. That's not true. You probably had a part in that resentment. But there's a more important reason why I need to let it go. because it says on page 64, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. Stop right there. Fran, is this the hill you want to die on?
No.
Are you willing to die to hold on to that resentment? And there isn't another human being on the face of the earth that gives a damn whether you resent these people or not. Billions and millions and billions of people are going on with their lives, and they couldn't care less about this resentment. But are you willing to die for it? Well, that's the choice you have. That's the choice you have. You can either die because of it or live in spite of it. So if you hold on to this resentment, you are not going to recover. It's not going to happen. There are four impediments to God that Sam Shoemaker lays out for us. Sam Shoemaker was the rector at the Calvary Mission in New York City, and he taught Ebby and Bill and Roland, and he taught these Fitz and all these guys and Hank Parkhurst that there were four impediments to God. What do you think the first impediment was, Fran? A resentment that you will not let go of. The first impediment to God is a resentment that you will not let go of. The second is a secret you will not tell. The third is a harmful thrill that you will not stop. And the fourth one is a restitution that you will not make. So are you willing to die to resent these people? And if you're not willing to die, then ask God for the willingness. Go through the process of step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and let's knock off the BS. Life is a very short phenomenon. You have no contract. Let's live your life to the maximum, to the fullest. Let's be of maximum service to God and the people about us, and let's let go of this resentment because you're going to die over it. Let's move on.
Thank you, Fran. Appreciate your question. Anne Marie M., your turn.
If I'm not
good morning,
Leah. That was the third one. Oh, I'm sorry. Which Anne Marie is it? Anne Marie K or Anne Marie M?
M.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Anne Marie M.
M,
please.
Yes, Leah. That's me. Thank you
yes.
so much. Thank you. And Harlan, thank you for once again another great presentation, and Leah for all your work and everyone. Through God's grace and by me working the 12 steps with a recovered compulsive overeater, I celebrated 2 years yesterday on the 31st. Thank you. My question is, do you direct people the obsession hasn't been removed, so they keep going back to the food. How can I or do you have a way of telling people not to listen to that obsession?
Yes, I have a very effective way. I will tie you up in my home, and I will tie you to the chair, and we will keep you there until you... No, I'm kidding. But the bottom line is you have to take different action. People say, well, I'm powerless over food. You're telling me to put the food down. You just told me I'm powerless. You're powerless, Anne Marie, but you're not helpless. You're going to have to gut it out. You're going to have to put the food down. You're going to have to lean into the fellowship. You're going to have to make a lot of phone calls. And you're going to have to make those phone calls before you eat the food, not after. Don't call me with cookie crumbs on your shirt, with cookie crumbs coming out of your mouth and telling me how sorry you are that you ate cookies again. Call me before you eat the damn cookies and let's deal with what's going on and let's talk before you eat the cookies. If you want different, you got to do different. You have a history of eating and going back into recovery and eating and in and out and in and out, and now you have 2 years. That's fantastic. But the bottom line is, for anybody listening to this, if you want different, you got to do different. It's a matter of reaching out. You got to want this so bad that it becomes absolutely imperative in your life. Recovery for me is numeral uno in my life. Nothing comes before that. Nothing, nobody, no hay, no how. I am willing to sacrifice whatever God puts in front of me for my recovery, and you got to take that tact. Let's move on.
Thanks, Anne-Marie M., for your question. Roz G., your question, please.
Roz is one of my favorites. Go ahead, Roz.
Of course.
You're. I love you, Harlan. This is Roz G., and I'm going to ask a question that I think would be helpful for maybe everybody on the line, and that has to do with travel. How does a person stay abstinent when they're traveling? And, you know, when you're in those places where the food is extremely famous and your partner says, or the person you're traveling says, you've got to try one of this. Could you please elaborate?
I have words that at my disposal that say, no, thank you. No, thank you. I'm allergic. No, I don't have to give an explanation. No, thank you. And I have to want to be abstinent. The disease really loves the atypical. I've noticed in my life that the disease loves the atypical. It loves a day that does not present itself often. I'm traveling, it's a birthday, it's a holiday, it's a this, it's a that. The disease loves that. It really thrives on that. But when I travel, I go to a grocery store. I'm going to be in Los Angeles on the 11th of January. And I'm going to get to the hotel because the OA birthday is the 13th, 14th, and 15th. I hope you're coming. I know you're coming, Roz, but I mean, you know, people listening. And it's going to be a fantastic convention. We're going to have some things where we're going to get together with vision people, things like that. But it's going to be fabulous. I have to remember the OA birthday be damned. I have to remain in recovery. What is the point of attending a convention if I'm going to use it as an excuse to eat? So what am I going to do when I hit L.A.? I'm going to a grocery store. I have a friend of mine in L.A., and this person is going to take me to a grocery store. I'm going to get the things I need. I'm going to pack my oatmeal. I'm going to pack my things. Now, I'm going to be eating out, yes, but I'm going to investigate. Where am I eating? What do they serve? What's the story there? What can I get? I'm not afraid to ask questions. I'm not afraid to ask the wait person, hey, what's in this? Could you find out? What's in that? Could you find out? I'm not afraid to ask questions, and I don't give a damn what people think because I don't live in what people think. I live in what I do. So I have to divorce myself completely from, oh, my God, what's this person going to think? I don't care. I don't care what they think. I have to make this the numeral uno thing in my life. And that's how I handle travel, birthdays, holidays, death, birth, life, whatever that may be. This comes first. And when I put this first, everything in my life is first class. When I put this lower on the totem pole, everything in my life turns to garbage. So I hope that answers it.
Thank you, Roz G.,
Thanks,
for your
Roz.
Question. Now we have Susan L. posing her question.
Susan L. Okay, Susan.
Susan L., a compulsive overeater. How does one get from not abstinent to abstinent? I heard what you said about...
Put the food down and work the steps.
Right.
I wish I had
right.
a more complicated answer for you because we thrive on the complex and we spin on the simple. It's just who we are. We are immature perfectionist rebels. Immature perfectionist rebels. And we love complicated things. We love complicated things. You put the food down. And you get a sponsor and you work the steps. That's how you do it. I don't have a more complicated answer than that, Susan. I really don't. How do they do it? They put the food down. They get a sponsor. They work the steps.
Thanks for your question, Susan L. Mm-hmm. Pete B., you're up.
Pete B. from Pennsylvania.
Thanks, Leah. Thanks for your service, Harlan. Thanks so much for your deep and heavy presentation, always insightful. And my question is, the big book is written for people that suffer from alcoholism, and we modify it to a certain degree to deal with the disease of compulsive overeating. What aspects of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous are okay to alter as it relates to recovery from compulsive overeating?
None.
Thank
None.
You.
There's no alteration that doesn't produce less results. The less we alter this book, the stronger the recovery. Let's take a look at page XX in the foreword to the second edition. And in the foreword to the second edition, on page XX at the top of the page, it gives us some statistics. Let's take a look at them together, Pete. Of alcoholics who came into AA and really tried, when they say really tried, what does that mean? It doesn't mean they worked the program out of the fellowship. It doesn't mean that they worked the program out of a diet. It means that they worked the program out of the basic textbook of this program, which is a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. What happened when they really tried? 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 50%. Put a pin in that. We're going to come back to it. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. That is 75% recovery. 75% of the people who came into AA and worked the program out of this book recovered. We can't talk about 75%. My God, we can't talk about 5%. We are stumbling into OA, and we're lucky if we're recovering at a level of about 2 to 3%, maybe less than that. But the reason that we're not recovering like them is we're watering down this book. So the answer to your question, in my opinion, Pete, is not one punctuation, not one syllable, not one letter should be altered. And the more you alter this thing, the more watered down your recovery will be. So that's my opinion on that, and I stand on these numbers. When we can get to watering the book down and approach these numbers, now you'll get my attention. But until we get to these numbers,
Harlan, press star 1. Harlan, press star 1.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I think that's God telling me to shut up or something. I don't know. All right,
Thanks, Pete, for your question. Okay.
Thanks, Pete.
Who else has a question today? I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Hannah S.
This is Larry. Larry K.
Anne Marie K.
Yeah.
Hannah S.
Yes, Hannah S. Larry K. Anne Marie K.
Arnie
J. Sarah R.
Sarah R. I missed a couple people there after Anne Marie K. I have Sarah R.
Michelle G.
Michelle G.
Jolene.
Daryl.
Helene.
Daryl A.
Okay, this list includes Hannah S., Larry K., Anne Marie K., Sarah R., Michelle G., and I believe I'm hearing a Helene, if that's correct.
Jolene.
Okay, let's go for it, starting with Hannah S., followed by Larry K. Hannah S., star 1 to unmute.
Hi. Okay, I thought I was unmuted. Okay, thank you, Harlan, for a great qualification. I'm going to try to articulate this. I don't know how good of a job I'll do, but I'll give it my best. So what I find, being in recovery successfully for many years in various programs, what I find is that I'm finding myself in a position, and I know I'm not alone in this, of it's almost like whack-a-mole or musical chairs. So if I get the food down, I need to go shopping. If I get the shopping down, I have to watch Netflix. And sort of underneath all of this is some kind of an emotion, and can't always identify it. Is it some kind of loneliness? Is it that black hole we talk about in recovery? Something just doesn't get healed. And so I find that I'm just playing musical chairs, and I'm really not sure if that ever changes or gets better. I've been doing this a long time. I'm a step person.
It will not.
What's that?
It will not get better. Not ever. Not today, not tomorrow. It will get worse and worse and worse and worse. What I have to do in those scenarios is I have to take different action. I cannot wait for it to change. It's not going to. It's worse today than it was a year ago, and it's worse a year ago than it was 5 years ago. And if I'm waiting for something to change, I'm insane. Because insanity is defined as doing the same thing again and again and expecting different results. It's not going to change, Hannah.
But I'm talking about being abstinent, but yet not losing that underlying feeling.
That underlying feeling will only go away when action is taken that is different from what you're currently doing. You want different, you got to do different. You want different, you want that action to change, do different. Where are you in the step process, Hannah? Where are you in the steps? Hannah, press star one. Okay, well, let's just assume that where it doesn't matter because my answer is going to be very universal. No matter where I am in the steps, Hannah, if I want different, I have to do different. I have to change my behaviors. And if I do not change my behaviors, nothing will change. It will change. It will get worse and worse and worse and worse. So I have to do different. I hope that answers it.
Thank you, Hannah S., for your question. Next up, Larry K.
Larry Kay, one of my favorite people.
Mm-hmm.
Larry?
Larry? We're looking for Larry.
Oh, there we go.
Larry.
Well, you both need to keep coming back. But anyway, Harlan, you've been in program, I don't know, you've been in program a long time, 40-some years.
I've been here 43 years. I've got 24 years of abstinence, so you can do the math.
Okay, and I'm not good at math like you are. But,
terrible.
But anyway, so what happened? What happened at 22? Can you talk, because I think it would be helpful if you could address that. Does that make sense? Yep.
Okay, thank you, Larry. Thank you for the question. It was 1998, and we were living in Eugene, Oregon, and Halloween that year was on a Saturday night, 1998. You can look that up. I remember it well. And I had been in relapse. I was gaining weight in leaps and bounds. I was probably 350 at that time, 400, who knows. I wasn't weighing myself, that's for sure. And I had had some beautiful recovery. I had had a 7-year stint of beautiful recovery, but I didn't maintain 10, 11, and 12. So I went back into the food, and I was in complete relapse. And my daughter, we were living in Eugene, my daughter attended a nursery school in Eugene, Oregon, that was having a spaghetti dinner for Halloween. And they set up stations at her nursery school where the kids could come in costume and trick-or-treat. This was at a time in 1998 when there were some very annoying headlines about people doing terrible things to candy and taffy apples and unwrapped things, and it was not a good thing. And the police were very on this, and, you know, because they were – you know, they were worried because when Halloween's on a Saturday night, there's a lot of craziness. But anyways, there was a spaghetti dinner, and she asked me not to come. My daughter asked me not to come. Why don't you want me to come, Mamala? She said, I don't want the teachers and my friends and their parents to see how fat you are. This is my daughter telling me this. And I didn't go. I didn't go. Those were three of the loneliest hours I have ever spent in my entire life. I had everything at that time. I had a beautiful income. I was making very nice money. I had a beautiful home in Eugene, Oregon. I had a daughter. I had a wife. I had German shepherds. I had everything you could dream of. And there it was, going into the toilet because of food. On December the 29th of that year, see, it still took almost 2 months. On December the 29th of that year, I spent my first day completely abstinent, and I have been abstinent ever since. I was losing my child. I was losing my wife. I was losing everything to this disease, and I had been in program for years, and I had to have a come to Harlan meeting with myself and say, what the hell are you doing? And I had to take radically different actions. There was no OA at that time in Eugene, Oregon. It did not exist. So I went to the AA group. I went to the group on Coburg Road called the New Freedom Group. Some of them knew my secret, that I was indeed not alcoholic, and I went to their open meetings, and they welcomed me with open arms. I met a guy there by the name of Les Downs. I think he's dead now, and he was a scholar of the Big Book, and he worked with me, and he was wonderful. And there were many people in that New Freedom Group of AA on Coburg Road in Eugene, Oregon, that not only knew my secret, but after the meetings, they would sit with me and ask me, did you want to share? And if I wanted to share, they would listen to what I wanted to share, because I can't share during the meetings. I'm not alcoholic. And they included me in everything that they did. And that's where I got abstinent, and that's what happened. But Larry, I want to thank you for the question. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry. Anne Marie Kay, your turn to pose a question.
I'm interrupting on Anne Marie M. I never realized how many people had such a beautiful name as mine. Good morning, everybody. And this is Anne Marie Kay from Pennsylvania. And good morning, Harlan.
Good
it's
morning,
so nice
Anne Marie.
You.
You're one of my favorites, too. Not that all of you are one of my, but you come to our Scottsdale meeting. So got to give you the love. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, honey. I love you right back. Anyway, my question today, Harlan, always has to do with sponsorship, because I have a fine line between wanting to be a sponsor and still wanting to be a middle school Spanish teacher and telling what they have to do to trill their R's. In other words, I can't be a codependent with them, and I know that. But I recently have a newbie, and what happens with me at this point, I think that what happens is they've told me they've worked the steps before. And they'll do a certain point. I'll say, well, where were you? Well, you know, I don't know that that's true about you. We got to go back here. And I ultimately find out that some of these situations have to do with what I think is happening. They haven't really surrendered in the third step. And therefore, I say, well, I think we got to go back to step one. So my question is, what can I do to, and other than saying, I know I have to be the adult in the room and I may not be the voice you need. I hear you on that, and I've done your lesson there. But what can I possibly do with someone that still thinks they're abstinent, but, you know, they want to fight me? And I, you know, I've heard too many people that use the stronger other programs, but, you know, this is the rule. I can't be that person. But what kind of insight can you give me to someone
that
still wants to
fight me? I don't
fight
with anybody, Anne-Marie. I don't. If you're going to fight with me, you better marry me. I'm not going to fight with you. I'm really
right,
not.
Right.
I'm done fighting. I'm old. I'm 68. I'm not fighting with anybody. I just won't do it. You're fighting with me. You need to hear a different voice. let them go. As far as step three, I'm just picking out stuff because you threw a lot of stuff out there at me, which is fine. There is no real surrender in three. All three is basically what you're doing in step three is you're agreeing to do 4 through 12. And I would ask you back, what do you see or hear that lets you know that they're not surrendering in three? Do you know how you, let me just cover this first. Anne-Marie, do you know how you know if somebody has worked step three, if they're doing their fourth step? Step three, you're not surrendering anything to anyone in step three. You're not turning anything over to anyone in step three. You're making a decision to do so. The action of the turning over of your will and your life, which is your thoughts and your actions, is 4 through 12. Step three is no more than an agreement to do 4 through 12. If step three takes more than 30 seconds, you're doing it incorrectly. Now, I'm going to say that again because I can hear some of you plotting. What do you mean? What are you talking about? If step three takes more than 30 seconds, you're doing it incorrectly. Step three is an agreement to do 4 through 12. That's all it is. Now, I covered that, but here's what I will tell you. If somebody comes to me and they say, I've already worked the steps, we're going to start over, because if your work in the steps was that effective, we wouldn't be having this conversation about you coming to me. So we're going to work them again. Don't want to work them again? Them gesund or hate, go. Okay, go. I'm not going to fight with people. I do not fight with anybody. I don't. So, Nemkazunter hate Gayarois means go away, go in good health. I have no attachment to it. None. Zero. I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm not a dietitian. I'm certainly not a third grade Spanish teacher. I don't know much about any of that stuff. But what I do know is this. You don't want to work with me. You don't want to work the steps again. Find somebody else. I hope that answers it. Was there any part of your question that I missed? Because there was a lot there. Anne-Marie? Star one?
I think you got it, Harlan.
Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Thank you. That's step three. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne-Marie K. He's a lover, not a fighter.
That's not. I'm a lover. I'm an eater, not a fighter. I don't know. Okay. Leah, I'm done fighting. I haven't got any fight left. I'll just tell you this as an aside. All the friends that I've had, I'm so lucky, but the ones that constantly want to fight with me, they're in my rear view mirror. I love them. I wish them well. I don't have the keach anymore. Keach is energy. I don't have it anymore. I can't fight with people. I just can't. I don't have the gas for it anymore. I'm old and I'm feeble and I'm a shut-in. No, I'm not. But I'm.
And we're moving on to Sarah R.
All right, yes, let's move on. I'm sorry.
Sarah R., your turn.
Sarah R., okay.
Star 1 to unmute Sarah R. with your question.
Can't hear you, Sarah.
Sarah, we cannot hear you.
No way.
You're going to have to speak into your phone, please.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yep.
Hi, everyone. This is Sarah R. in New York. Gosh, it feels like I haven't been in Vision all year. Okay, first of all, thank you, Leah and Harlan, for all your service, always. My question, you know, Harlan, you were talking about in a few questions back, you were talking about, you know, the four impediments that block you from God, and forgive me if the wording is off, but for me, it's just about the resentments. You know, I feel like, you know how we come on here and we say we're compulsive overeaters? I'm a compulsive resenter, and, you know, working a beautiful program in recovery, I feel like I have to fight that every day. So can you talk just like a little bit about some recommendations about what I could do about that? Because it literally, you know, it like makes my glasses dirty. You know, for those of you who wore masks and glasses during Corona, so that's kind of what resentments do to me every single day.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I have to really do is I have to see in my four-step inventory where these resentments are coming from. You know, when you go to a shopping mall, there's a sign, and you look at the sign, and it says, this is this store, and it says, you are here. Doesn't it say that? You are here. And if you use your Google Maps to get someplace, the Google Map has to know where you are to tell you how to get where you're going. So doing that four-step inventory tells me who I am and where these resentments are coming from. They come from an attack or a feigned attack on the three basic instincts of life, which we don't have time to enumerate now, but it's sex, security, and social instinct. I've done a lot of podcasts on the fourth step and chapter five. You can listen to those or go to scottsdalebigbook.com. I have them there too. But we have to know where we are and where these resentments come from. But what I have to do is I really have to also look at what it says in the big book. And what it says in the big book, and this is in chapter 5, I'm looking at page 64. This is the second time I've read this today. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all form of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. Are you willing to die for these resentments, Sarah? Are you willing? Is this the hill you want to die on, hon? Is this really it? Are you so selfish and self-seeking that anybody that doesn't stick to your script, anybody that varies from the script that you have in your head is to be damned to eternal fire and hell and damnation?
Harlan, press star one, please.
Okay. I don't know what's happening here, but is this the hill that I want to die on? Am I so selfish? Am I so self-seeking that if anybody doesn't stick to my script, I need to resent them and damn them to hell if they don't stick to my script? Do I have a higher power that knows better than me? I hope so. So these are the things I would look at. If you don't let these resentments go, you're not going to recover. Start with that, and then take whatever inventory action you need to take to get to the bottom of this, because this is standing in your way from the life you most want, and anything that stands in the way of that should be overcome with God's help. I won't be able to overcome it alone, but with God's help, all things are possible. Let's move on, Leah.
Thank you, Sarah R. Michelle G., your question, please, star one to unmute.
Good morning. This is Michelle G. Thank you for your service this morning, both of you. So my question is, and pardon me, I'm driving, so I don't have the text in front of me, and I probably will butcher it, but from the doctor's opinion, when Dr. Silkworth says, at some point the alcoholic will regain control, and that word always stumps me up, because as a sponsor, and I'm kind of going piggybacking on a question that was asked a while ago of, like, would you change anything? And that's the part when I'm working with somebody, I get caught up on that word control. So will you explain?
There's no way you will ever be able to control your eating, your food, or your life. You will never regain control. What he's referring to is, as a result of a spiritual awakening, you will regain control. And I wish he hadn't have said that, but that's fine. If you understand it within the context, it makes perfect sense. What he did not say was you'll be able to regain control based on your own willpower, based on your own self-will. If you notice, when he says that, it's as the result of the work that you do, the psychic change, you'll be able to easily control your intake of liquor, which means you won't control liquor. You won't consume liquor, sorry. So it doesn't mean that you'll have willpower to rely on. It means if you do the work, you don't have to eat that way. I hope that clears it up.
Thank you, Michelle G. Jolene, your turn, star one to unmute. Jolene.
Hi, my name is Jolene, and I live in Boston, and I've never asked a question or shared on these meetings. So I just was wondering if you could elaborate on going through the steps quickly, quote unquote, how long You know,
it
does that
normally takes people that I sponsor about 8, 9, 10 days to go through the steps completely. The faster you go through the steps, the more efficient the recovery process is. There are people that stretch that out. They protract it into weeks and months. There is no reason on God's earth for some of the things we are doing to stretch that out. I do not recommend people take a long time to get through the steps. I recommend a short time. Why? Because page 89, nothing ensures immunity from drinking like intensive work with other alcoholics. Now, because I have podcasts, I cheat. I cheat. What I do is I say to the person, day three, you've been out of the food for 2 days? Okay, listen to the podcast on the doctor's opinion. Follow along in your big book. Do that twice and call me. I don't read it with them necessarily unless I have to. But they will read it, they will listen to the podcast, and then we have a conversation. And during that conversation, I will prod them, I will poke them, I will test them. Do you have an understanding of the points of the doctor's opinion? They are the allergy and the twist of the mind and the effect and various other things from the chapter. Do you get it? If you don't get it, I send you back. Do it again. Call me again. If they don't get it again, then we read it together. If they still don't get it, I don't have answers. You may need to hear a different voice. Then the next day, Bill's story. Now, Bill's story is divided into two sections. The first 8 pages are about his plummet into alcoholism. The second are a recovery. So let's do the first 8 pages, and then later on today, we'll do the second 8 pages. You got to work with me here. You got to give this time. You got to give this effort. I don't want to hear that you're busy. You found the time to eat donuts. You find the time to recover. So we've covered 2 chapters in 2 days. Chapter There is a solution. Podcast twice, read along twice, call me. There are 7 chapters that we're going to cover. Later on, we'll cover the rest. But the 7 chapter up to working with others can be done in 7 days. I give 3 hours for step 4, not 3 weeks, not 3 months, not 3 years, 3 hours. If you can't finish it in 3 hours, something is wrong. 3 hours for step 4. That's it. We do step 5 tomorrow. Make sure you're there. I don't give them a bunch of time. You know, it's funny. You give someone a month to do their 4 step, they'll do it in a month. You give them 3 hours, they'll do it in 3 hours. Let's take a look at step 4. Resentments. You know who you resent, what you resent. You know who or what you fear. You know the sexual harms you've done others. There's nothing here you don't know. What could possibly take so long? What could possibly take so long? Okay? We move through quick. Andale, schnell. And that's how we do it. And we do it because it's most effective. Now, then we can go back and do the rest of the chapters. Now we can do a deep dive into history and into learning this and learning that. But let's get you recovered first. Let's get you living in 10, 11, and 12. And then I'll show you about Roland and I'll teach you about Ebby and I'll teach you about whatever you want to know. But let's get you through the process first. Okay. We maybe have time for one more, Leah. What do you think?
One more question or one more group?
Whatever. Not well. One more group. No. Whatever you want. What do you want to do?
Okay. Who else has a question for
Adrian,
Harlan?
From Florida.
Adrian, I got you.
Adrian.
Susan C. in New York.
Susan C.
Angela
Justine in Oregon.
Angela D.
Heather M. in Indiana.
Heather M. Okay.
Ann A. New York.
Justine and we'll squeeze in Ann A. Please pose a question different than what
yeah,
has previously been posed, okay? Yeah. If it's been posed, change your question, please, or pass. Okay, Adrian, go ahead with your question.
Hi, thank you, Harlan, and Happy New Year, everyone. What I
You had said that on that day, December 29th, you had one day of total, complete abstinence. I know there's alcoholic foods and non-alcoholic foods, but what did you mean by total 100%?
I did not consume alcoholic foods or ingredients, and I did not consume volumes of green light foods in any amount other than what was prescribed. That's what I mean.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Leah?
Thank you. Moving on to Susan C., your question, please. Star one to unmute Susan C. Okay, I'm ready. Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Leah and Harlan, very much. My question is about the doctor's opinion. You spoke kind of in shorthand about some of the things that you go over with a sponsee in terms of the mental twist, the understanding of the physical allergy.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you might say a few more things, a bit more in depth, about exactly what you go over in the doctor's opinion when working with someone. Thanks so much.
I go over with them. I want to make sure I want to elicit responses from them that allow me to know that they understand the twist of the mind. What is the twist of the mind? Where do these thoughts come from? Where does a thought? Why would a person with my history? I was emasculated by this disease physically. I was emasculated emotionally by this disease. I was struck down as a baby by this disease. By the time I was 5, 6, 7 years old, not only were people screaming at my mother and father about why are you letting him get so fat? Why are you letting him eat so much? What are you doing to this kid? But I was embarrassed for them, and then they started screaming directly at me. Where do these thoughts come from? They come from a desire to change my perception of reality. And food does something for me, not to me, for me. What does food do for me? Certain foods, M&M's do it, McDonald's fries do it, pizza from Gino's East in Chicago does it, but broccoli doesn't. Steamed cauliflower does not do it. Hard-boiled eggs do not do it. What do these foods do? They instantly change my perception of reality. Dr. Silkworth calls that the effect. And that sensation is so elusive that I will pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. I don't even care that I'm killing myself. That's how much I want that. I want that effect. The buildup of human emotions and the reality that I see around me every day is in a sepia, a black, a white, a gray, like a sepia, like a gray. It's colorless. It's drab. I put a Reese's peanut butter cup in my mouth. And for 9 seconds, everything is in technicolor, and everybody is my friend, and everything is beautiful. That's what I'm chasing. That's what my mind wants. Now, what is the physical allergy? Well, what is an allergy? It's an adverse, abnormal reaction to a food, beverage, or substance. Adverse means it's harmful. Abnormal means most people do not react the way I do. And my reaction to food is adverse and abnormal, which means I'm allergic to certain foods. When I eat them, I am set up with a craving for more of the same. The more French fries I want, the more I eat. And the more of them I eat, the more I want. The more I want, the more I eat. The more I eat, the more I want. And it's just endless. And I am not a normal eater. I am not a heavy eater. I am a compulsive overeater. Why am I a compulsive overeater? We don't know. What differentiates me? The allergy and the twist of the mind. If they understand that, we move on. If they don't understand that, we stay right there and make sure that they do understand it. I hope that answers your question, Susan. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan C. Moving on to Angela D. Your question,
Angela.
Please.
Good morning, Harlan. This is Angela R. in Texas. How are you today?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
I am good. I have a question I've wanted to ask you for some time about choosing who you will sponsor. This is a real short thing. About a year ago, I had a lady call me, want me to sponsor her. She was into witchcraft, and then we got into the higher power thing. Her higher power was Satan. And I knew that I was not, I'm not going to say qualified. I was qualified to get into the book, but I couldn't deal with Satan, who in my opinion is evil, to be her loving higher power. Nevertheless, I declined that nicely and said she needs somebody with more, you know, and a different voice. My question to you is, I'm sure you have many, many, many requests for sponsorship. I have certain criteria that I kind of go by. One of them is like I can't work with a Satan worshiper. I wondered if you had criteria. If you
Here's
had
my
some,
criteria.
Or,
Are you willing to go to any lengths to get this program? Are you willing to do whatever it takes to recover? I don't care if they worship Satan. I don't care if they're Yankee fans. I don't care if they're Dodger fans. I don't care what they are. And Dodger fans and Yankee fans are, of course, unacceptable in society. You have to be a Cubs or at least the White Sox and Bears, but Yankee fans, Dodger fans, scourges of society. But I've sponsored them, and, you know, I try to look the other way. But seriously speaking, Angela, the only criterion I have is, are you a compulsive overeater? Are you willing to go to any length to recover? And if you are, let's roll up our sleeves and let's get started. If they're not, then I don't. I also don't sponsor women. I do not sponsor women. And I feel like other than that, there's no big criteria for me. I just don't have it. I've sponsored people of various religions, various things, various walks of life. Doesn't really enter into it for me. But I hope that answers it. But you're one of my favorites, and I do love you, and I hope to see you tonight on our meeting.
Thank you, Angela R.
Thanks.
Moving on to Heather M., your question, please.
Good morning. Happy New Year, everyone. Good morning, Harlan. Thanks for your service today, you and Leah. So I'm Heather M., compulsive overeater in Indiana, and my question is, so I know it's been stated very clearly that in order to put the food down, or in order to get the 2 days of abstinence, you have to just put the food down. My question is, what was your experience, or how did you, in those 2 days, Harlan, keep from picking it back up? Were there certain things that you did so that you were?
I made a lot of phone calls. I went through those
okay.
2 days with tears in my eyes. I went through those first 2 days with a nausea that was beyond description. I went through those first 2 days where I thought the back of my head from the withdrawals was going to explode. I went through those first 2 days knowing that if I could just get through these 2 days, I never have to go through this kind of withdrawal again. I was losing my family. I had everything I had ever wanted, and I had nothing. I was making beautiful money. Beautiful money. I had never had such financial freedom in my entire life. I saw something within reason. I could buy it, no problem. We were going. We went to Hawaii on vacation. And we went to, you know, we would go to SeaWorld, and we would go here, and we would go there. And I mean, my wife and daughter were going home to Chicago like you change your socks. Didn't even bother me. And yet, when they were gone, I would eat the house. So everything I had ever wanted wasn't good enough. And what I really want is that conscious companionship with God. But to answer your question, how did I get through those first couple of days? With great difficulty. I don't think I slept more than 20 minutes. I obsessed constantly about the next meal, and I watched the clock. It was tough, but I got through. I got through it. And I have to reach out to others. I have to get to meetings. We didn't have the podcast then like we have now. We had tapes. So if you didn't have the tapes, you were screwed. computer was just in its infancy at that time for home use, 1998. We had one, but it wasn't like it is today. You didn't have libraries and libraries of podcasts and things and meetings, things like that. But I got through. You have to want it, and then you have to do it. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you, Heather M. Our final question for the morning comes from Ann A.
Ann A. from New York, I think.
Hey, I'm sorry. Hi, Harlan.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Oh, I'm so well. Thank you so much. And Leah, thank you so much. Okay, my question is, Harlan, and please forgive me if you answered this. I was at my home meeting, but I'm changing homes because my home is really with Vision and with Scottsdale now. How do you talk when you sponsor your guys? Is it important that you ask them if they know their trigger foods and if they have a food plan? I mean, do you have that conversation? Because I get bogged down with that.
Not a lot. What I recommend strongly is go to a nutritionist. Mm-hmm. Any food you ever picked up in your life where you have it in your mouth and you can't wait to get it again goes out the window. Anything that when you get up in the morning, you're looking forward to it, you know you're going to be eating this or you're going to be eating in a certain restaurant that has that, goes out the window. Anything that you just worry you won't get enough of, out the window. But I said, beyond that, go to a nutritionist. They can help. If a nutritionist knows what they're doing, if a nutritionist tells them you can eat everything in moderation, I tell them, don't use that person. That's a person who doesn't understand this disease. Just because they're nutritionists, just because they're psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors, doesn't mean they understand this disease. So anybody that tells anybody that I'm sponsoring, you can eat everything and anything in moderation, I say, no, you can't. And if the person tells you there are things you cannot eat, use that person. That's how I do it.
Thank you, Ann A., for your question. Thanks to all who posed questions this morning. And, of course, thank you, Harlan, for being you. Thank you for your experience, strength, and hope, for delivering a consistent message of depth and weight, and for all you do for Overeaters Anonymous and A Vision for You. We thank you. I thank you. Today's share ID, 19,807. That's 19807. Let's close from page 164 in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.